And so to Carl Smith, standing by with briefings. Carl, do you agree we've tended to understate some of those issues?
I think you're right, Robin, in that scientists tend not to overstate their findings because the peer review and grants processes don't reward it. So now that the modelling and consensus has firmed up around climate change, it's pretty telling that many scientists are calling it a crisis. And in this science brief, let's begin with climate change and how different generations will experience its effects. Based on the latest modelling, human-induced climate change will have more severe effects the further we get into this century. So it's probably no surprise to hear that younger generations will see more heat waves, floods, fires, and other extreme weather across their lifetimes. But how much worse off will younger generations be compared to their parents or grandparents? Well, according to a new study published this week in the journal Science, based on current modelling, babies born in 2020 can expect to see between 2 and 7 times more extreme weather events across their lifetime compared to people born in 1960. The study tracks and models the impacts of climate change across the lives of different cohorts of people. So taking heat waves as an example, based on the paper's modelling, people born in 1960 will see, on average, 4 extreme heat waves during their lifetime. But for children born in 2020, that number jumps up to 30. That's under a scenario of warming based on current climate pledges. But even if we limit global temperature rises to 1.5 degrees, which is increasingly considered ambitious, the babies of 2020 are still predicted to see an average of 18 extreme heat waves. The paper says that for people over 40, the different warming scenarios won't drastically change the number of extreme weather events they'll live through. But for the youngest cohorts, the modelling shows that limiting the global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees instead of 3.5 degrees will mean vastly fewer floods, storms, fires, droughts, and other extreme events. Younger people have recently been hitting the streets and courtrooms, railing against the intergenerational inequity of climate change. The authors of this paper say their analysis helps clarify just how significant that inequity could be. And while we're sparing a thought for the future, have you noticed that you haven't been as future-focused during recent lockdowns? If so, it seems you're not alone. During the UK's first COVID-19 lockdown, a team of researchers started texting people. They'd ask, "What are you thinking about?" and "What are you doing?" But they weren't just checking in. The researchers were hoping to see how people's thought patterns were changing as our social and work lives were turned upside down. The British and Canadian team compared this bank of text messages to a similar data set from before the pandemic and have published their findings this week in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. One change they noticed was that people mentioned the future less often, unless they were busy with their work. The authors point out that future thinking is broadly associated with better mental health. So they say if people felt unable to look further ahead during stretches of isolation, then that might help explain some of those lockdown lows. The researchers also saw changes in how and when people thought about others. Those who were alone during lockdown mentioned other people less often. But if they had a rare opportunity to interact with others, then their thoughts about people would spike. So the authors say thinking about others likely depends on how often we interact with people, or the sort of social environment we're in. This might all seem a little obvious, but the authors believe the findings could be handy. They suggest that for those caught in negative patterns of thinking, a change in environment might be all that's needed to prompt an internal shift. It's not a perfect study, and the associations they report are just that. But it joins the fascinating new body of work that's been documenting the enormous social experiment of the last 18 months. And finally, researchers from Flinders University have unearthed an ancient eagle in South Australia. Belinda Smith has covered this story for ABC Science Online. Belle, what's so special about these old bird bones?
Well, Carl, I mean, they're old and they're from a bird. So birds, they don't really fossilise very well. They've got really lightweight bones to fly and they're hollow. And this particular skeleton that was found in South Australia is a 25 million year old eagle. It's the oldest known eagle discovered in Australia and one of the oldest eagle-like raptors in the world. Normally, these really ancient birds are identified by a single bone, and that's all that paleontologists have to go off. But this is 63 bones, including some talons and part of the beak.
And so what did this ancient eagle look like and what was it called?
So the bird was named by the researchers Archohyrax sylvestris, which means ancient hawk of the forest, but it's an eagle. And it looked a little bit like a wedge-tailed eagle, but it had shorter wings and longer legs for its body. So this means that it likely lived in a forest. And this really matches with the fossil record of the spot where it was found. So where the fossil was dug up is a place called Lake Pinpa. It's about 400 kilometres north of Adelaide as the crow flies, or as the eagle flies. And today it's just a desert. But 25 million years ago, it was the site of like this lush forest. And it was also home to a really big shallow lake. So when you think about a wedge-tailed eagle and the way they hunt, they kind of soar through the open sky looking for prey and then they chase it down. But this Archohyrax, it lived in the forest, and those shorter wings were really good, not so much for speed, but for manoeuvrability. Similar kinds of raptors, birds of prey today that live in forests, they are ambush predators, so they will sit on a branch and just wait for a possum or a mammal or a bird to make one wrong move, and then they'll just swoop in and grab it. So this is how the researchers think this eagle hunted.
And I believe this ancient eagle was top of the roost in this environment back then.
Yeah, it was an apex predator. And that's another reason why this find is so incredible. Apex predators, there's generally fewer of them because they're the top of the food chain. But it probably didn't eat fish, despite living next to a lake. And that's because it's got slightly longer legs, which aren't really conducive to fishing. So fish probably wasn't on the menu.
I'm sure there's many more mysteries to be uncovered from this now dry Lake Pinba. Belinda Smith, thanks so much.
No worries, Carl.
And next week's Science Brief will be special for two reasons, Belle. First, I'll be away, so you'll be stepping in. And second, I believe you're covering a few special prizes.
That's right. It's Nobel season, so there'll be plenty to talk about next week.
That's Belle with the Nobels next week. And back to you, Robin.